Fan on Demand.
Good evening, I'm John Molinaro, and you're listening to the Soccer Central radio show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tonight, James Sharman and I talk about the latest issues in the world game, both domestic and international, including Toronto FC's pursuit of Jermaine Defoe, and whether English striker is good a fit for the Reds. Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun will drop by to offer us his thoughts on the matter, as well as what other moves the TFC has to make this offseason. We'll also be chatting with Les Jones, the author of an extraordinary new book on the history of Canadian soccer. And last but not least, having it or not having it, a quick fire segment where James and I will offer our opinions on the day's big stories. Thanks for joining us. Settle in for the next hour. James is going to be joining us soon. So in the meantime, I'll hold down the fort. Just want to say what a pleasure it is to take over as the host, following in the footsteps of Nigel Reed, a good friend and colleague of mine. Nigel, as you know, no longer with The Fan, but still a friend of the show, still a friend of the network, and talked to him before I got this job and took over for him, and he was gave me his complete blessing. So a classy move by Mr. Reed. So just wanted to give a hat tip to Nigel, because I know he's listening tonight. A lot of talk about reports about Jermaine Defoe and how he's going to be joining Toronto FC. I think the Daily Mirror newspaper in England said the deal is done. Toronto FC has come out and since refuted that. So a lot going on with Defoe and whether he's going to be joining the Reds anytime soon. Joining us to talk about is Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun, who covers the team regularly for the Reds. Mr. Larson, how are you?
Hey, man, how's it going? I think I'm your first guest ever.
You are?
honored, absolutely honored.
Well, we wanted to start big, right? So we figured, yeah. how can we make this the best possible show with the best possible guest right out of the bat? So I couldn't have think of anyone bigger than you.
All right, hopefully I can live up to it.
Well, listen, I mean, both you and I, and as well of other media outlets, have been reporting on this Jermaine Defoe thing. You know, the people that I've talked to, the sources that I've talked to, have said that, you know, they don't refute that Toronto FC has been trying to get him and they're negotiating hard with him, but that this is not close to being done. What have you heard? What's your take on all this? Do you think he's the right fit for Toronto FC?
He's a world-class, borderline world-class striker who could potentially be on, England's 23-man roster for the World Cup. But, this all started a month ago when I believe it was TSN at halftime of TFC's game. I kind of mentioned it, and then we had a source that same day saying that, he was one of TFC's top targets. And since then, it's kind of go back and forth until the Mirror, like you said, this week reported that the deal was done. Now, TFC said that inaccurate, which isn't exactly refuting that it's getting closer. So I think, they're just kind of towing that line, waiting to potentially finalize a deal, and I think they are moving in that direction.
Do you think, and again, the people that I've talked to, the sources that I have been in contact with, they seem to suggest that this could get done possibly as early as January. If it can get done in January, and he's able to enjoy a full preseason and then start in March, how big of a boost would that be for the Reds, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's a big boost whenever you add someone of that quality up top, especially after playing last season, without their best striker and Danny Kuvermans, who essentially missed the entire year. I mean, that's a lot of goals to miss in the lineup. I think they finished last year with, something like 30 goals through 34 games. So it's definitely an improvement. But I think something everybody's kind of been pointing to is Defoe alone enough? And is Defoe, and even if Gilardino comes into the picture, which is also rumored, is that enough? And I don't think it is. I mean, if you look at the goals this guy scores, he's going to need some service. And right now, you look at that midfield with, Matias Laba, unless you're planning on him stepping into that number 10 role, I don't think they have enough in a guy like Jonathan Osorio to be the day-in, day-out guy, to provide a guy like Jermaine Defoe the kind of service he needs to be a top striker in the league, even with the quality he has.
Gilardino is another sort of a rumored name that they're going after. And again, people that I've talked to have confirmed that the club is going after him very hard. Potentially, we're talking about a Defoe and Gilardino striker partnership. What kind of a partnership do you think that would make? I mean, historically, in the context of MLS.
Well, it'd be one of the most, you know, other than maybe Robbie Keane and Landon Donovan, one of the most dynamic duos the league has ever seen up top. But like I said, without someone playing beneath them to kind of thread those passes through, to play balls in over the top, to provide service from the wings. No, maybe Alvaro Rey can do it, but can a guy like Bobby Conley? I'm not sure at his age, and I'm not sure at the level he's playing at right now. So I think although, you know, it'd be a good combination at the top, it'd be a feeling out period between the two where they'd be lacking the kind of service they're used to, other maybe higher caliber leagues. So I think there'd be a large feeling out period, first of all, that they need to figure out. And they'd have to kind of form a relationship with somebody who fills in that number 10 role. Hopefully TFC is going after someone like that from within the league, like they've promised they would be this offseason.
Hey, Curtis, James Sharman here. I've made it into studio, finally.
Welcome,
here.
James.
I ran from Soccer Central and made it. So I missed the first part of your chat here, but you mentioned those playmakers and who's going to pass the ball to these two, assuming, of course, that they do sign. And I know Bezpečenko has been saying for a while that there will be some talent available around the league for an affordable amount of money. Who are you hearing? I mean, what does that mean? Because you need some quality to provide balls to quality, and I'm not sure who that might be.
It doesn't mean anything right now. I think you have to wait until December 1 to see which players are going to be released from certain teams. We know that, at least in my last chat with Bezpečenko, he said the club's kind of looking to teams like New York, teams like LA, teams like Seattle, teams who are going to be over the budget come 2014. So I think if you look at those rosters closely, if you look at the midfielders, or if you look at some of the playmakers around the league, maybe there's some options there. It's also interesting that FC Dallas has released a guy like David Ferreira. Is a guy like that someone that TFC wants to bring in at his age? And he's kind of had some injury woes recently too. But another guy like Dago Kobayashi, who Vancouver released today, is that a guy maybe you want to bring in and give a try to? There are some names out there. It's just a matter of who TFC is willing to kind of take a chance on.
It's interesting because everyone seems to be talking about the forwards, and it'd be great if they could bring in one or two forwards. And while that's true, I think they've got holes elsewhere. From covering the team, Kurt, this past season, I mean, you saw as many games as I did. What holes do they have to fill? What's aside from the forward position? What are the off-season moves do you feel that they have to make to strengthen this side?
It's interesting you say that because I did talk to Stephen Caldwell today, TFC's captain, and just kind of talked about Defoe, and I mentioned Gilardino, and he said, hold on, it's going to take more than just those two guys coming in this offseason to turn the ship around here. I think if you look at the back four, I'm not sure if Donald Henry's really a playoff caliber defender. And since Tim Lewicki has said that this team will make the playoffs in 2014, are they going to need to upgrade there? Maybe. Richard Eckersley appears to be on the way out. That's not official yet. So are they going to need to update, the right back slot over a guy like Mark Bloom? There's absolutely no midfield depth right now. They're going to need to bring in another winger unless they think Reggie Lands is the answer. Which I don't right now. I think if they do bring in Defoe and Gilardino, a guy like Bright DK can kind of play in reserve, and that's kind of looking pretty formidable at this point. But, like you said, John, a lot of holes and not much answers right now other than big names.
Holes. It's like a colander out there. So many holes. Daniil Henry, is he not at West Ham right now? I believe training there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously getting experience, but have you seen West Ham defend this year? Issues there as well, perhaps, although Allardyce, of course, has some good history there. Ashton Morgan, what's his future, do you think? Obviously, we all want to see this guy succeed. We know that he has got a skill set, but he also has some real shortcomings too, Kurt. What is your thought about him going forward?
I agree with you, James, but I think something I noticed this year was that we had that slow start. He fell out of favor with Nelson, but then by the end of the year, he kind of fought back into the lineup and fought his way back. And I think that's kind of a great attribute, for a young player to have, is a fall out of favor after, maybe being coddled for too long at the club and then to fight back into the picture. I think it left back then, like, all right. We don't know much about Jonas Elmer because he didn't really play that much last year. But I think really, the only spots I'm kind of concerned about at the back right now are, the left center back spot with Henry and, the right back spot with Mark Bloom, who really, only has a quarter of a season, if that, under his belt in MLS action.
You mentioned before the lack of midfield depth, and it was something that I kind of harped on throughout the entire season, how I just thought, obviously Osorio and Alvaro Rey did quite a good job, but I just thought the team lacked a little bit of midfield creativity, and that You know, I've been saying for a while now that they never really replaced Amado Guevara as that sort of midfield architect and creator who can kind of spread balls around. Dero is available. What do you think the chances of him possibly coming back to Toronto, and would it be a good fit considering everything that is has happened in the past?
Well, I think if Dero is a guy that came across their desk, they'd listen to it. But, you know, let's not forget that this is a guy that was making, you know, $650,000 a year at BC United. He's going to have to take a pretty severe pay cut to come into the picture at TFC. And, you know, when he left here, a lot of the people that maybe he didn't get along with, a lot of the people who he maybe had a contract falling out with are now gone. So, you know, it's not something you should rule out, but at this point, I think it's a bit of a long shot.
You know, I spoke to him a few weeks ago, and I asked him that very question, would you like to come back to TFC? And he said, you know, he's really aggrieved to a certain point with how it ended and how people will look back on the negative of when he left here. But he says, I had some great times here too. You know, I played some really good football here. You know, I got all-star berths playing here. I won a championship, a Canadian championship playing here as well. I think he would love to come back to TFC. And obviously, you're right, Kurt, for the right money, they would definitely listen, I think. I think they'd quite like him here. Great, great brand to sell around the town as well. But will he make take a big drop from that wage? Probably
yeah,
not.
I think you also have to think about, though, that he started to kind of gain a little bit of a reputation around this league. You know, everywhere he's been, he's kind of left, you know, maybe not on bad terms, but he's kind of, you know, picked up a reputation of being a diva. I mean, Ryan Nelson and Ben Olsen are very good friends. So, you know, let's not forget that, you know, Dero did leave DC United where Ben Olsen is. So don't think they're not really in contact regularly about the trials and tribulations they might have had with Dero when he was there.
That's a good point.
You mentioned Ryan Nelson as well. And, you know, that's another question mark. I want to see this guy succeed. I want to give him some time. But he was Kevin Payne's man. Kevin Payne, you know, lauded over this guy when he first hired him. Payne's gone now, of course. Yet, obviously, Loicki speaks as if he's his guy now as well. I know, John, you're quite vocal on Twitter, certainly, about your reservations about Ryan Nelson as coach. But, you know, what do you think is the long-term future of him? Has he got to succeed straight away this season? Is it playoffs or bust, or will he be gone before then?
Well, I certainly do. I mean, I don't know, Kurt, I'm sure you've got an interesting take on this as well.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that I said since maybe mid-season last season when Nelson was struggling, and that, you know, he wasn't, you know, he walked into a situation that wasn't, you know, I think any coach of any caliber would have a hard time succeeding with the situation he walked into. Now, you can argue that with the players he had, he probably should have grinded out a few more results. But, you know, I mean, looking at that roster in preseason of last year, it was skeleton with tons of injuries. Torsten Frings and Danny Cooperman's injured,
sure.
You know, something like 40% of the salary cap, you know, on the treatment table. But, you know, he'll have a short leash this year. I mean, if they get up to, you know, a slow Aaron Winter-like 0-9 start and there's certain coaches available, you know, around the globe, I wouldn't be surprised to see Lewicki move fast.
Well, you talked about certain coaches being available, and two that have recently interviewed for the Vancouver job is Jason Kreiss and Bob Bradley. God, if you're Tim Lewicki and you know those two guys are out there, do you not at least make a phone call or a backdoor approach and see if they're interested in the gig?
Yeah, I think you're always feeling around if you're Tim Lewicki to see who'd be interested in coming. And I think you always have someone in reserve in your back pocket in case something goes sideways early next season and you need to make a change to save, you know, what we've been saying for a long time is, you know, a season that they need to turn things around finally in order to, you know, fill the seats back up at the BMO Field, which has kind of began to empty out, you know, from seven losing seasons.
Right. You alluded to it earlier that you spoke to Caldwell for a story that's going to be published tomorrow in the Toronto Sun. Give us a sneak peek. What was the substance of the conversation?
Yeah, you know, it was just an overview of, you know, his time here and how he came to be in Toronto. It was actually interesting because he actually told me that John Carver tried to bring him here 4 years ago and he actually turned it down.
Right.
Because he said he thought his future was going to be in Europe, which I guess to a certain extent it was. But said he's glad he's got a second chance to come over here. His family absolutely loves him in Toronto. And he's really just kind of said that, you know, this is something I've been doing my entire life, kind of going to teams that are struggling, trying to get them, you know, promoted, trying to get them to, you know, become more organized and to start winning games. And he said he's done that throughout his career, and he's not going to stop here until that happens. And he said, you know, has all the respect for Ryan Nelson and wants to see him succeed here. And he's convinced that with the right offseason, they're going to be able to at least compete next season like they failed to do last season.
Well, time will tell, I guess. Mr. Larson, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it and hope to have you back sometime soon.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Kurt.
I don't know. The whole Nelson thing, I'm still not convinced about.
Yeah, and I understand why. I mean, he came aboard with zero experience as a coach, and his first year as coach of TFC was a disaster, not through his own means, perhaps. He wasn't perfect. He made mistakes, but, I mean, who could have succeeded in that circus this past season? But it was for a long-term build, and the long-term build was supposed to be orchestrated by his mate, Kevin Payne,
right,
who is no longer there. So, you know, Payne had his back. I wonder how long Lywicki would have his back.
Yeah,
that's the question, because Lowkey wants. He mean, it is honestly playoffs or bust next year.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Simple as that. We know that.
Right. And that's my point. I mean, here. I mean, look. I appreciate Nelson didn't have the greatest squad to work with, but I still think he had enough that they should have got a little bit more out of them, right? And they should have been a little bit more competitive and not out of it until July. And I don't see how or why Tim Lywicki was so quick to sort of hitch his wagon to Ryan Nelson. I mean, with all due respect.
It was very quick.
It was very quick. And with all due respect to Ryan, because I think he's a great guy personally, but this isn't Pep Guardiola we're talking about. This isn't Alex Ferguson.
Well, it might be.
Well.
We don't know that.
But, you know, and I get the argument, well, you know, they've gone through so many coaching changes and you want to go through stability. But if he's not the right guy, then he's not the right guy. So I mean, get the right guy in there. And I'm not convinced he's the right guy.
I think he's a player as well, though. I mean, the reports were that he did fall out with Kevin Payne
right.
at times last season. And he obviously backed the right horse in the end, whoever that was, be it Lywicki, wherever it is. He played the game very well.
Yep.
And he's doing well now. I look at that team the last year, and as horrible as it was, and it comes to this point with TFC, they weren't smashed in too many games, right? From a scoreline standpoint, they were relatively organized. Yeah, some horrible defensive miscues, we know that, but they were individual errors that, you know, a coach just throws his arms up in the air about.
Right.
You know, they were generally relatively well organized, and they were in games, just had no talent, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I want to give this guy more, you know, a greater chance. Should he have been hired last year?
No.
Probably not.
No, I don't.
But
think
he's,
so.
he's in the house now, and I want to see what he can do.
I just feel as if, though, but like you've got someone like a Jason Kreis who, much like Ryan Nelson, didn't have any experience,
sure.
And he kind of, you know, came on, did really well at Real Salt Lake, and Bob Bradley.
Well, that's the guy, isn't it?
I mean, my goodness.
But would Bradley come into this situation where he, you know, wouldn't have as much say? Well, money talks. Like, sure. But when you have the GM and you have the guy above him, very much, you know.
That's a fair point. No, that's a fair point. But I think Bradley is the type of guy who would see this as a challenge and would want to. I think he's kind of motivated by turning things around and kind of over, you know, setting things right, like he did with Egypt, right?
So yeah. Well, there's only one way to go, isn't it, with this team?
So, oh, absolutely.
You know, whether it's Ryan Nelson, whoever it is one. You can't get any worse.
Well, you wouldn't think.
There's always a way, I suppose. I think we may have said that before, haven't we? When reviewing TFC seasons,
right.
There's only one way to go, and. That's not true, actually.
Believe me, James, in 7 years of covering this team, they always find a way to stoop to new depths.
So. It's going to be a tumultuous offseason, though, isn't it, across Canada in MLS? You know,
oh, I think
Montreal,
so.
We're still not sure what's happening there.
Right.
Obviously, Vancouver are releasing players left, right, and center. They're still looking for their coach, be it, you know, Carl Robinson, who obviously wants the job. You mentioned they've interviewed Bradley and Kreis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting, isn't it?
It is.
What the landscape looks like in MLS in Canada this time next year.
Jermaine Defoe, good or bad?
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I know he needs service. He's not a player that's going to create too much by himself, but he will create some. He's got great pace. We know that. He's 31, and that's what stands out to me. He hasn't played much in recent years. He's a pretty young 31, I think.
I would agree.
And I think that kind of skill set will at times dominate MLS. And I hope they find the players around him. How he works with Giladinha, if that happens, I'm not sure about. Both those players need service, different kinds of service. You know, if someone's not knocking it to Gila on the near post, then he's not doing very much.
Right. Whereas, and you said, you know, he requires service, but I think he's not, I mean, speaking about Defoe, he's not a traditional hitman or target man like Giladinho. Defoe will at least sort of drop back and kind of create chances for himself. So,
great,
I mean, he does.
Renowned for his great channel running as well.
Absolutely.
You know, but at the same time, it's all very well running into a channel, but the ball better end up in that channel.
Right.
And, you know, right now, is that player in the team? Probably not.
Right.
There's some obviously young talent there. Azorio played very well, but is he going to play centrally or out wide? Laba obviously was a nice revelation last year.
Very nice.
Played very, very well, but they need more. Simple as that.
And I still think they need, and Kurt alluded to it, I still think they need defensive help. I mean, I was quite impressed with Stephen Caldwell, but I think it's too much for him to ask him to babysit guys like Danielle Henry and Gale Bousamonde, who, you know, I know everyone is going to say, well, Danielle, he's young and he's learning as a Canadian.
He's been young for a while now.
Yeah, he's been young for a while. Exactly. He's an old 21.
He needs at some point to take that step.
Yeah.
And he hasn't shown it yet.
Yeah. Maybe this training session stint with West Ham, maybe that'll do him some good, but I don't know.
It's funny, I was watching Champs League this week and Olive Melberg playing against Juve and I'm thinking, oh, what could have been?
Yeah, that would have been a good signing. That would have been a good signing.
Not good enough for MLS, though, apparently.
Yeah. I'm surprised you're here, actually.
Yeah, I know. I rushed. So what happens is JMO is obviously hosting, thankfully. I finished Soccer Central, ideally, at 7:30. We're live at 7, so ideally we finish at 7:30, but TV being as it is, occasionally we need to fix certain things. If I screw up, God forbid, or someone else screws up, we need to redo things. So I will try and get here every week by 8 p.m., but I might be late occasionally, as I was today.
Well, I was going to say I was surprised you're here because the talk around the office was that you were going to get canned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, because, you know, we dropped $5.2 billion on the NHL rights.
And no, so they needed.
Yeah, no, well, no, they just needed to, you know, raise that kind of money. So, they
well,
figured,
I mean, I don't make quite that much.
Oh, come on now, come on!
I don't even make a third of that.
Get rid of your salary, and that covers like the check to the NHL. No,
well, maybe for the first couple of years. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Come on,
I am paid a staggering amount of money.
You've got $5.2 billion, you know, in your cushion pillows at home.
We were all thinking that's great. It's wonderful. It's great news, you know, for the company. But I wonder what it means for soccer down the line. I think it means good things. I already do.
Right. You're listening to Sportsnet Radio, The Fan, Soccer Central Radio, and we'll be back after the commercial break.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Back on Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, James Sharman and I holding it down.
Who are you, John Molinaro?
That's right. I should have introduced myself.
Yeah, sorry. It helps. It helps. Well done, JMO.
I'm new to this radio thing.
You're doing a great job, by the way.
No.
You are. Don't screw it up.
Try not to. Continuing on with the Canadian theme from before the commercial break, we're pleased to be joined by Les Jones, who is the author of a new book, Soccer, Canada's National Sport, 150 Years of the Memorable, Unexpected, and Controversial. Les, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm new to this thing as well.
So we're all in the same boat.
Any
then.
Idiot can do this. Believe me. 6-0 does it. Come on. It ain't that hard.
Maybe, Les, this is an interesting new book that you've written about the history of Canadian soccer over the last 150 years. Maybe you can tell us a little bit in terms of the background. How did you come to write this?
I came to write it. You can get to blame the World Cup 1986 team. When they were inducted into the Soccer Hall of Fame a few years ago, they were delighted. They felt they'd been overlooked for 25 years and that their achievements had been minimized. And so I thought, well, their achievements haven't been recognized. There's a whole bunch of other Canadian achievements out there that people should know about. And that eventually led to the book.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, I get the sense that this was very much a project about revealing these stories about Canada's sort of soccer achievements that people otherwise wouldn't know about.
That's exactly it. It started off as achievements, but it expanded beyond that. As I talked to people, there were more and more stories out there. And so we added the memorable, the unexpected, the controversial, and the humorous. I'm biased, but I think it's quite a good read.
How long did it take? It
took 3 years, 2 years longer than expected. It was due out in time for the 100th anniversary of the Canadian Soccer Association.
So you've had lots of support, have you, from the CSA and the various clubs and people around Canada?
We've had support from everybody in the soccer community. There's so many people have helped basically write this book or supply photographs for it. I'm really impressed.
Because for me, I mean, people, you know, hear that, oh, a book about Canadian soccer, and they say, well, there can't be many big moments, surely. And I find that ignorant, quite frankly. I think, you know, obviously there hasn't been much success over, you know, the history of Canadian soccer, but those big moments almost mean so much more because there are so few of them. And for you personally, which one stands out? Is it the 86 qualification for you?
86 qualification is obviously the most important one, but we've got a lot of other achievements. I mean, going way back to 1904, when Canada won the first Olympic gold medal at soccer. And even before that, in 1891, the world's very first penalty was taken by a Canadian team
who was
playing in Ireland at the time.
Did they score?
It goes a long way back.
Did they score? The penalty?
I'm sorry?
Did they score the penalty?
Yeah, they scored the penalty, and they scored a second penalty as well in the subsequent game.
But that wasn't the last goal they scored, thankfully.
Well, it's pretty close.
James.
But on the other hand, we also set a FIFA world record for number of goals scored when our women's team beat Puerto Rico 21-0. That's still a FIFA women's record.
Really? Wow.
Christine Sinclair holds the record for the most goals in a World Cup game.
I get the sense that there's countless stories there that you were unearthed. What are some of the other ones that maybe perhaps people don't know about? Obviously, the 86 team is the most famous one, and I think a few people know about, you know, the early Olympic success at the turn of the century. But what are some other ones that perhaps
the Gold Cup in 2000,
right.
You know, the North American and CONCACAF Championship, but almost 100 years before that, Canada played a match against an English team for the first world championship. And we drew. We drew 3-3, so we could claim we were the first world champions.
Where did that take place?
It took place in Ontario.
Really?
So moving forward, Les, obviously you follow Canada for a long time, the highs and the lows. As a fan of Canadian soccer, where do you stand right now? Are you, you know, expecting to update this book in a few years' time with more great moments, or are you going to sit back and just see what happens?
Well, as I said, so many people supplied information, and just talking to them, everybody's got a story. Whether you're talking to players, officials, or administrators, there's interesting and fun stuff behind the scenes and that happened out of the public eye. So there's a whole book there of anecdotes that could be the next book, but no promises.
It's interesting that this book, I mean, the format, it looks like a coffee table book, but it's beautifully illustrated for people who don't know about it. There's some great photos there. But it's not sort of traditional chapters. It's almost as if you're writing a series of articles about, hey, did you know this? Was
it's
that
intended that way? Short stories,
yeah.
Bring back some memories, open people's eyes, cause some chuckles, something you can pick up and put down.
Yeah, so it was a conscious decision to write that kind of format.
Yeah, I think we wanted to make it easy for people to get into it and to enjoy it. And people seem to have been quite impressed with it.
So. We're joined by Les Jones, author of Soccer Canada's National Sport. If people want to buy this book, and they should, it's a fantastic read, where can they buy it?
Well, we have a webpage, CanadianSoccerStories.com, and there's a PayPal button on that, and it's on special right now. It's 50% off in the next 2 weeks.
What kind of help did you get, Les? I mean, did you sort of reach out to former players, former administrators, former managers in terms of unearthing some of this
stuff? I got help from everybody, from the West Coast to the East Coast, from players to referees to administrators. Everybody was keen to get involved and to help.
What were some of the difficult parts about writing the book, do you think?
Well, the time, it just expands more and more. The book ended up twice the size. It's 256 pages. Probably the biggest problem was getting some of the photographs that we needed. When you're going back 100 years, that presented some problems.
Were there any stories that just didn't make the book? Is a cutting room floor rife with some great stories?
No, in the end, we put them all in from... you know, from match fixing to female streakers, it's all in there.
Oh, female streakers.
With pictures?
I'm sorry?
With pictures?
With pictures, yes.
Oh, right. Well, there you
excellent.
Go. The sickos out there.
You mentioned the match fixing, sort of, you alluded to the match fixing there. And obviously there was, you know, it was a dark period in history, you know, in the mid-80s or in the late 80s with that. Maybe you could sort of fill in... tell the story for some of the younger listeners who may not be familiar with you know, the match fixing, Paul,
well,
that kind of held over Canada.
Let me tell you about the original match fixing, which people also don't know about, incurred with the Toronto Falcons in 1968. And in fact, the match was fixed by the referee.
Wow.
It's a different kind of match fixing. They were trying to get commercials injected into the live telecast. So when a player was injured, the referee would hold the player down for an extra 15 or 30 seconds to make sure they had time to run the commercial. So delayed the game just for the commercials. It was the referee who was at the center of it. So
even though it was 68, I'm sure Declan Hill was all over it.
Well, Declan Hill actually has a second book. He's just launched a second book on match fixing, which came out last week.
Yeah, How to Fix a Football Match, it's called. Another must read.
What about the 19?
The later one?
Yeah, what about that?
Well, it was basically, it's public knowledge. It was a Singaporean syndicate that was fixing matches all across the world. And one of the matches we think they fixed here was a CSL game. As far as we know, that there's so much betting on CSL games, you wouldn't believe it. They estimate there's $185 million a year bet on CSL soccer games.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm pretty sure Ben Rycroft and Declan could write a book just on that. It's sad,
right.
It really is.
So. And at every game, there's a guy there who's reporting back to head office on what's happening in the game. You know, if somebody's been injured, if there's a goal been scored, if somebody's been sent off, because the odds are going to change according to what's happening in the game.
Right. Les, what impressed me about this book is it's obviously a labor of love. You could tell that you very much put your heart and soul into this. Why is the game so important to you? Why does soccer matter?
I grew up in England, so I grew up in a soccer background, and my father was heavily involved in soccer. And I ended up being a soccer photographer. I played and refereed earlier, so I stayed involved with the game through the photography. So I've always been, on the periphery of it. I said, if you grow up with it, you're going to love it. And I think that may be the problem with Canada, why it hasn't developed to the same extent here, is because people don't grow up with it the same way. But that may change. You know, we're now the most popular sport in the country in terms of participation.
You're right. And I think, too, as more and more sort of new Canadians come to the country as well, I think they'll sort of impart their love of the game and passion for the game to the younger generation, much like how my father, who grew up in southern Italy, imparted it to my brothers and I.
Well, that's what happened. The game has had its quieter moments, and it's been resuscitated each time by immigrants coming after the First World War and immigrants coming after the Second World War, bringing their love of soccer with it. And in addition to that, there were the Canadians who took part in the wars and got introduced to soccer that way and then brought it back with them.
Well, being an immigrant myself, you're welcome, JMO. You're welcome. But it's a great question. You know, why do you love soccer? Because I look back at my history of loving soccer, it just angers me and frustrates me. I don't know why I love it, because it brings me nothing but heartbreak most occasions.
And it takes up a lot of our time.
A lot of time. Because you get paid for it, right?
Well, that's true.
Can't be all bad.
Les, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the book. Give it one more plug. Where can people get it?
They should check our website, CanadianSoccerStories.com, and they should do it soon while their special price offer is on.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot, and good luck with the book going forward.
Thanks, Les. Great
Thank
stuff.
You. Bye.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know what? For a Canadian soccer fan, it's a must read.
I think
it
so.
It really is. There aren't books like it out there.
Right.
So get it while you can.
And I think, too, it's an important book as well, because I think, you mentioned before that, Canadian soccer. How long of a book could that be?
Yeah, all those smart asses saying, it must be, 10 pages long?
Right. But I think, we've got a vast and rich soccer heritage and culture in this country. So I think it's important that people like Les kind of take the time to document it.
Yep, and maybe enjoying that little wave we're enjoying ahead of the 2015 Women's World Cup as well.
I think that's going to be huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think that's going to, much like the Under-19 World Cup in Edmonton, that one year in 2002, that gave us Christine Sinclair and Carl Lang, that sort of really introduced the game to a whole new generation.
Well, let me ask you, because, Les mentions his moments, his big moments as a Canadian soccer fan. He's put them into this book.
Mm-hmm.
For you, what is the moment? When you think of Canadian soccer, what is the moment that jumps to your mind?
Oh, wow. I think back to, you know, in 1985 when Canada beat Honduras and they qualified for the World Cup. I know it sounds an obvious selection.
No, but that's fair enough. Of course it is.
But it was it really was a magical sort of time. And you know, people are going to scoff at this, but it really was almost a golden generation, a golden era of Canadian soccer because, you know, in 1984, Canada qualified for the LA Olympics and went to the quarterfinals and played Brazil pretty close. Mm-hmm. Then a year later, they qualified for the World Cup. So you had all these sort of forces coming together at the right time. And, you know, you had guys like Bobby Leonarduzzi and so many others who were, you know, playing at a pretty high level. And, you know, there was great, I mean, it was a great moment just to see, and it was nationally broadcasted too, mm-hmm. which was the other thing on the CBC. So to see Canada actually qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah. And can you imagine it now with the media platforms we have available to us? I mean, for me, I came here in 1990, so I missed out on all that.
Right.
But for me, it was, I'd say, well, one or two things. The Gold Cup in 2000, obviously, and that's obvious once again. But when I think of that, all I think of is Craig Forrest making these obscene saves. Yeah. Craig can buy me a beer now. But, you know, he just made these wonderful saves after saves after saves. Richard Hastings, you know, popping up and scoring this huge goal. You know, these types of things. And then, obviously, the Women's Olympics. You know, the loss to the States.
Right.
You know what I mean? Remember the energy around, you know, around Canada, quite frankly, that day. It caught the imagination of the entire country, how close they got and how they were ripped off. And it's almost more important that they lost that match than even winning it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Against a big, bad American. Right. So important.
It's funny about the Gold Cup, too, because I always kid Jason DeVos, who, of course, scored the winning goal against Colombia with a header at the far post. I always say, you know, goalie should have saved it. And he should have.
Yep. But it didn't.
But it didn't. Didn't get it. So, you know, and what a moment that was, too. I mean, and the Pasadena and Forrest getting the trophy and holding it aloft with DeVos afterwards. That was a fantastic moment. Yeah, good stuff. Joining us now, Igor Henrique. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, John.
I thought it was Henrique, isn't it?
Henrique.
So Dunlop had it wrong.
Yeah, well, no, Dunlop says it with his like, Portuguese accent, but it isn't that great an accent. He's probably going to tweet about me later about it, but it's better than with the Z and so forth. But another edition of Avenant or Not Avenant.
Nice.
So first off, Jermaine Defoe and Alberto Gilardino as the two Toronto FC strikers of the next season. Is it going to happen? Avenant or Not Avenant? John?
Ooh, tough. I think they'll get one of the two. I think they'll get Defoe, and I don't think Gilardino is going to come, only because I'm still get the sense that he's leery about leaving Italy and he wants to finish out his career in Italy.
Avenant with Defoe, yeah. I mean, everyone I speak to say it's essentially a done deal. It's going to happen. So, yeah, that's going to happen. His mother was here, I think, two weeks ago.
A couple of weeks ago.
Right. So, yeah, that's it. Gilla, you know, I don't know. I know the stories out there about the people have spoken in the Italian community saying, don't come here. You don't want to come here. But clearly they're targeting those two players. Samietto's name's mentioned as well. But, listen, you're going to get a Gilla and a Defoe in the front of that TFC attack. Figure the rest out, but those are two quality players that will make a big difference.
I'd love to have both of them. Don't get me wrong. I just think we're only going to get Defoe.
Okay. So Arsenal has the favorite to win the English Premier League. Let's go with James first.
I'm not having it just yet. I would love to see it happen. I still think Man City are and should be the favorites. I know their away form is dreadful, but I think they'll get it together. They've got a new manager, and I think they should still be favorites, and they will recoup that gap. However, Arsenal have played such wonderful football all season long and last season. They're showing more spine than they've shown in the past. The young players have taken a big step forward this year. So they might well win it. But I'd still, right now, at the end of November, I'd say that Man City are still my favourites to win it.
I'm somewhat having it.
You're an Arsenal fan, though.
That's true. I should say I'm a Gunners fan. So, I mean, I'm biased here. But I really like the way that they've been so consistent. I mean, they've just grinded out results both domestically and in Europe. I think guys like Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey and Giroud and Mesut Ozil are just playing absolutely out of their skin, and they just seems to be coming all together at the right time. I don't write off Man United quite yet. I think this whole talk about, you know, oh, this is a year that's going to be written off under Moyes, and he's just going to, you know, they're writing this off to begin with. I don't believe that. You don't write off seasons at Man United, especially when you've been handpicked by Sir Alex Ferguson to be your replacement. So I tend to think, you know, United is still in this.
Oh, they're in it, yeah. I don't think they're going to win it this year. However, they're going to finish top four. Of course
Absolutely.
They are. They always do, right?
Bayern Munich to win back-to-back Champions Leagues.
Oh, I'm totally having that, yeah. I mean, they're, you know, unbeaten. They've won their last 10 games in Champions
League. 10 unbeaten, right, in the Champions League.
10 wins in a row. Yeah. No one's ever done that. Plus 7 by clean sheet. You know, a plus 24 goal differential in that run. They won their group pretty easily. I don't see – the only team that's going to be Bayern Munich is Bayern Munich.
You know, I spoke to Bobby McMahon about this on Soccer Central earlier this evening and said, are they actually better this year than last year? And he said they might be from a depth standpoint. The younger players have really emerged more than in the past this year. And, you know, we saw, you know, this week in the Champions League how great they looked against a decent Galatasaray. Hmm? Galatasaray? Yeah, yeah. And that's despite suspensions and injuries to some pretty key players. So the depth is there. As long as this mole doesn't you know, derail their hopes and dreams of winning something this year, because, boy, I wouldn't trust that mole. Who is the mole?
Good question.
Frank Ribery looks like a mole.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a shady character.
I can see him burrowing under the ground, but I don't think he'll be leaking information.
True, he
looks like a shady
character. Is that too much?
He does look like a shady character.
he is a shady character. Yeah. He is.
Yeah, trust me.
But boy, he's quite the player, though.
AC Milan, are they the most disappointing club team in soccer right now?
Not having it. I mean, they're obviously disappointing. I mean, they're 13th in the Serie A table, and they're, what, 20 points back at Juventus, and they're essentially out of it. But I'm going to go off the board, and I'm going to say Olympique Marseille, only because they lost all 5 of their Champions League games, and they were out of it after 4. I mean, I know it's a tough group with Dortmund and Napoli and Arsenal, but I was expecting a lot more from them. And the way that they bowed out so meekly, I think that they're the poorest team in Europe.
I'm having it because you mentioned it, J-Mo. They are, here we are, November 28th, is it? And they're in 13th place, 20 points back of Juventus. This is AC Milan, who should be a perennial contender. They're not a contender. They're Superman up front. Mario Balotelli's missed 2 penalties in the last month. Everything's going wrong. I think they might be. I mean, no one, perhaps we didn't have them to win the league this year, but at this point, playing in 13th spot, dropping points week after week after week, I don't know how Allegri's still there, quite frankly, given how that ownership works there. Maybe because they're, you know, restructuring that is actually giving him some more time right now, because whoever the new person coming in to replace Galliani is, do you think they'll be as patient as he's been with Allegri?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
The Canadian men's national team in 2014, will they score more than 5 goals total?
Oh, jeez, cruel.
Ouch. Not having it.
They're not having it.
You know, I haven't seen the schedule yet. Who's the plane coming up? Do we know?
I don't think they have any games announced.
Well, they better start playing some useless teams they can beat. Otherwise, I think they dropped down to 114th in the rankings today. 114th, an all-time low, because they're playing teams like the Czech Republic and Slovenia, who are decent sides who they cannot beat. So they will slip down. So when Benito Flores says, part of my plan is to climb the ladder in the FIFA rankings, how do you do that? By playing better teams than you. Right? Because you're not going to win those games. As simple as that. So we've got to see the schedule. They must play some horrible teams, get some points, and slowly crawl back up the top. Because right now, it's not good, is it, boys?
Yeah. I'm not having it either. I mean, I don't even think if they do play like scrubs that they could necessarily score 5 goals.
Well, Martinique might have proved that, right?
Yeah. I mean, and Mauritania.
Oh, sorry, Mauritania. Sorry. Yeah.
And
confused there, excuse me.
You know, who do they have to score goals? I mean, Canada has no sort of proven goal scorers. And Dero is, God love him, I think he's been a great servant to the Canadian national team for a very long time, but he's 35.
Yeah.
And Simeon Jackson was wasteful in front of net, so I just don't see it happening.
All right, that's another edition of Avenir Not Avenir.
Nice.
Good job. Thank you, Igor.
We got Enriques.
We got to wrap things up. But before I do, I want to give some shout-outs. I want to thank Dan Riccio and Igor behind the glass for producing tonight's show. Also want to thank Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun and author Les Jones for joining us as guests.
There's Jen behind
the
glass,
And Jen
too.
Behind the glass as well. Jen pointing at me.
She wasn't pointing.
She was. Bunch of games on Sportsnet EPL this weekend. Check out sportsnet.ca tomorrow for a full preview and lineup. And next Monday, we'll be recording the Soccer Central podcast. So you can listen to that on iTunes. And James and I will be back next Thursday.
Yep. Don't forget the roundtable goes this weekend as well on Sportsnet World. Rowan Ricketts in studio with Danny Dicchio. Old school TFC in the house.
With Ricketts, you know it's going to be good. That's it, guys. Thanks for joining us. Until next week. Have a good weekend and cheers for listening.